You're listening to The B-Side, a podcast of Blessed Hope Community Church. Hey, this is Malia, your host as usual, and today I'm joined by Pastor David.
Hello, everybody.
And we are just marching right along in our Narrow Road series that has everyone in a tizzy, I think.
Well, I don't know if everyone. I mean,
I definitely am not alone when I've had like panic.
Yeah.
Thinking like, oh my gosh, am I saved? Am I not saved?
Hey.
Am I saved? Am I not saved?
Because, yeah.
You know, we're all questioning it.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. That was kind of, I don't know if I said that flat out, but that's kind of the point of this is to, they're signposts and they're meant to be keeping us on track and they're meant to, again, I don't want anybody, if you're questioning, so I should say this, if anybody's questioning, I don't want you to be like in despair,
right.
But that's one of the reasons we should, if you're questioning, then that might be God saying, I want you to consider this. And that's a good thing. I mean, that's a great thing to allow God to guide you to confidence and reassurance. So
sure.
I'm glad if you're questioning in some ways, just don't throw up your hands and give up is the point. So
perfect.
Anyways.
Perfect. Well, 2 weeks ago we, talked about adventure.
Yes.
And how this journey is just an adventure. Of
it is.
Being in the kingdom.
It should be.
So first question for you today, how do we practically live out this calling of being dangerous? Because you had mentioned that we are called to be dangerous.
Yes. So let's clarify. So anybody doesn't remember, if you weren't here for the sermon, that that point of being dangerous is when you enter into an adventure, the enemy should see you as dangerous. So what we are fighting against in this spiritual warfare is we are called to an adventure to be seen as someone that's dangerous to the enemy. And that is done by our pursuing of Christ and our witness of Christ and sharing the gospel with people. And then also just demolishing strongholds. You know, that's what we kind of talked through. So to answer that question of, you know, how do we live into that or, you know, embrace that is first, I think there has to be an acceptance in our minds and our hearts that that's what God wants for us. And I say that because I think in this cultural Christianity that we live in, meaning this mixture of biblical Christianity and then what the world has kind of made us think Christianity is, I think too many Christians have come to a conclusion that God's number one priority for us is to provide security and safety in life, right? Like comfort. I was actually kind of thinking through this morning, and I don't want to downgrade the beauty of our country, but the whole American dream mentality. Like we've tried to mix what it means to be a faithful Christian to this American dream of God wants to give me this comfortable, wonderful, safe life. And the two, if you really understand it, they can't mix together the way we have tried to. Because you can't live dangerous unless you're willing to risk. And you can't live dangerous unless you're willing to be put in very uncomfortable situations. And we can't live dangerously unless we're willing to let God take us to some very dark places in the world and face things that are uncomfortable. And so I think first off, it's for Christians to have to wrestle with their conclusion that God's number one priority is that they have safety. Like God's like, I want you to be safe. Not really. That's not biblical, you know, in the sense that Jesus said, you know, follow me. And he didn't go to safe places.
Right.
He went to very uncomfortable places and places where he was seen as dangerous to the establishment and to the way darkness was in the world. So I think that's a first part is we have to really wrestle with that. Like God would never ask me to put myself in a position that is unsafe or uncomfortable. Because I think a lot of Christians have come to that conclusion. So that would be my first is like, you have to wrestle with the mindset of what you think God's number one priority is for us. The second thing with it is to live dangerously, going back to everything we talked about that sermon is, none of it is dependent upon us. So what I mean by that is the enemy's never going to, the enemy's never going to sit there and say, oh, I'm nervous because here comes David. right? What he's going to be is, oh, that's not good because here comes David and God's with him. Mm-hmm. Right? So to live dangerously speaks even more into the necessity to really invest in your intimacy with God and your filling of the Spirit. And like, so when you show up, like God's with you and like in power and in presence. So again, you know, it's, I can't think of what it says, but I've seen it many times where it talks about be the type of person that, you know, when they, you know, like when you wake up in the morning, the enemy, you know, is like, oh, they're, you know, I don't remember how it's worded, sure. But it's kind of this like, make him fear you. Yeah. Again, it's that mindset. He doesn't fear me. Mm-hmm. He fears the God that's in me.
Yeah.
He fears the God that's through me. So if I'm not prioritizing my relationship with Jesus the way I need to and giving him the control he needs, man, we're kind of like the story of the people that were trying to cast out the demon and they got their butts whooped, mm-hmm. right? And the demon's attitude was like, listen, I've heard of Paul. I've heard of, you know, I've heard of these. Who are you?
Yeah.
You know? And so that's kind of that thing is sometimes I think we charge into, well, we're kind of like the Israelites in the Old Testament. So, you know, they won in Jericho, mm-hmm. and then Achan sins, mm-hmm. right? And then they rush into, you know, battle into Ai, mm-hmm. right? And God's like, I'm not going with you, mm-hmm. you know? And so then they get their butts kicked. And sometimes I think we do that. We get this rally, like, yes, I'm going to charge. Yeah. And we run ahead of God mm-hmm. without God. And then we fail. And then the enemy's like, see, you're not dangerous. Well, it's because it's not us.
Right.
We're not prioritizing the relationship with Jesus. We're not prioritizing. And we see that a couple times in the Old Testament. We see that again when the people refuse to go into when they reject to go into the promised land. And mm-hmm. Moses is like, all right, you're not going in. And they're like, no, we'll go now. And they try to charge in. Mm-hmm. And God's like, I'm not going with you. So they were dangerous. They were meant to be dangerous, but because they didn't prioritize that relationship with Christ and yeah. God the way they were supposed to, they had no authority, no power. So I think those are two of the main ones is really challenge yourself on what does God want for my life, mm-hmm. right? And how am I prioritizing like my relationship with him mm-hmm. and the empowerment that he's going to give me to go do what I need to do.
Right.
So
it kind of reminds me of like C.S. Lewis's The Screwtape Letters
mm-hmm.
with like the devil and wanting us to distance ourselves from the things that are actually going to connect us to God and
yeah.
how that helps them have control.
Yeah.
So I'm just such like a practical thinking person.
Yep.
How do we like as we're doing these self-evaluations how do we evaluate our lives as far as like, are we living dangerously the way God has called us to? Like, do I quit my job tomorrow and run off to another country? You know, like how do I, what does that look like if you feel like God has called you to the place that you're at? Or what does that look like mm-hmm. if, you know, you've had, maybe you think you've had some biblical calling to go somewhere else.
Yeah. So one of the first thoughts is, so I like how you bring up the calling me to go someplace that like I'm packing up and I'm moving.
Yeah.
I would say that the majority of us, God will never ask us to right. do that.
Right.
But here's where the evaluation up for me practically is. Mm-hmm. Do I have the mindset that he would never so if that got brought up right now, would my instant answer be no?
Right.
If it's no,
yeah.
then I'm not submitted to Christ.
Sure.
That's where I think it starts, right? Is mm-hmm. I remember one time I preached a sermon when I first started out in ministry, and I had a person come to my office, and they were, okay, so her and her husband had two separate businesses, and they were very successful. And so they were very well off financially. And she was very adamant where she comes into my office, and she says, God would never ask me to be poor. Like her mindset was like, God, my God would never ask me to give up my, you know, he would never ask me that. And I said, well, that's where you're wrong, right? Because he asked the rich young ruler to do it because that he knew that was the one thing that the ruler would say, I'll never give this up for you. So when you start thinking practically, you got to start asking, I think that's some of, you know, that question is he may never ask me to do anything massively crazy, like moving to, you know, right. selling all my possessions and doing that. But do I have this mindset that the answer is no, even if he did? Mm-hmm. If he did, then that's my idol. That's my, mm-hmm. you know, that. So I think that's some of the questions is like, what do I think God would never ask me to do? Sure. Right?
Because for some people, it's not necessarily an idol. I mean, I don't know if I want to say not necessarily an idol, but I'm thinking about like some people, like the, like we don't want to preach the poverty gospel either. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where, because I think there are some people that God has given great resources, but in order to steward well. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. We're making it about the wealth or right. the poverty. We're not making sure. it about just being obedient.
Right.
That's why we're trying to justify. We try to justify, yeah. right? Yeah. This. Well, let's make it about. It's not. That's not even the question. Mm-hmm. It's not about the wealth. It's not about the poverty. It's about just being obedient to God, saying, "Go where I'm asking you to go, mm-hmm. and do what I'm asking you to do." That's where it just kind of comes down to.
Sure.
Everything else is just the details of what that looks like, you know. Because I've wrestled with that. I've known some people that in ministry that you know they felt very clear that God was calling them to dangerous places, even in our own country, mm-hmm. like some neighborhoods that I'm just like, and I've sat there going, oh man, God, it's not even about wealth. It's about, I don't know if I want to put my family in that.
Right.
Right. Lord, like my kids.
Yeah.
Why would I put my kids in that? And there's nothing wrong with a person wrestling with that question, right? Mm-hmm. Well, God, the safety of that. But then we have to go down to the core of it. If God's truly asking me to do that, mm-hmm. do I trust him or not? Mm-hmm. Right? Do I trust him and what he's asking of me? But then some of this, I think, for us, I mean, these are the big picture stuff. But let's just take it to living dangerously. Mm-hmm.
Because there's a difference between being dangerous for God and putting yourself in dangerous situations, right?
Yes, but sometimes God might ask you to be right, in a dangerous right. situation.
But
you
I'm
know?
Just trying to like hash out where yeah. we're okay.
Yeah. yeah. But I think for our context, again, God, most of us, God will never ask you that. But mm-hmm. think about how it scares us to even go share our faith with people.
Right.
That's dangerous.
It's paralyzing.
It's yeah. And that's where we need, you know, that's that mm-hmm. practical stuff is accepting that, no, God, you've called me to this. Mm-hmm. It's scary. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable. Like, this
and
is dangerous.
Are making fun of us
and exactly. Yes. And so let's not even worry about the, will I have to give up all my finances? Will I have to, sure. Maybe what you have to do is challenge your reputation.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe you have to challenge, you know, and live dangerous and, just have that awkward conversation with somebody that you care about and you're mm-hmm. scared on how they're going to, you know, honestly, yeah. how they react.
Sure.
And when you talk practically, okay, so those are pretty clear moments. If God's motivating me to share my faith with somebody mm-hmm. and I don't, I've allowed my fear to get in the way of God saying, no, I've right. empowered you to step into this. So it's going back to that. Well, God would never want me to be uncomfortable or God would never want me to challenge losing this relationship with this friend. Because I've had that struggle.
Yeah.
Like, God, if I talk to them about Christ, man, they might get mad at me. And there goes my friend.
Heck, even right. just praying
yeah.
before a meal with people who aren't followers is yeah. like scary
some,
because
yeah.
you're like, hey, can I pray for us? And they think you're crazy.
Yeah. 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 Or I've mentioned it before with your family or even friends mm-hmm. to say, hey, if they're visiting, I'm going to go to church. You guys don't yeah. have to come with me. It's scary to step mm-hmm. out and say, you're not the priority.
Yeah.
And so that's some of that living dangerously. It's those moments of yeah. is Christ first or is myself or, mm-hmm. you know, and we all deal with them
yeah,
every day.
Yeah,
every
yeah.
day we all deal with them. It's even the somebody listening to this. It's not even it's living dangerously to walk away from situations. Mm-hmm. Like if you're in a job where people are being very unchristian and mm-hmm. conversation, mm-hmm. God's going to call you. Like you if you're feeling that conviction, don't participate in that. Well, God, if I walk away, they're gonna say things about me and they're gonna leave me out and. Mm-hmm. But that's part of living dangerously.
Right. I'll remember that next week during staff meeting.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah.
Just kidding. Okay, so moving on. This past Sunday, we got to talk about joy. So I think people were welcoming some of this other...
well, I thought the adventure one was... I mean, come yeah. on. It's like, yes, let's go do that.
Yeah. Unless you're not adventurous, then it's kind of scary.
I'm not really, but still it gets me excited. No, let's do this.
Yeah. So, okay. So we talked about the difference between biblical joy and worldly joy. But as Christians, we know that God is going to allow us to endure suffering and trials and just really hard things in this life.
Yep.
So how do we, what is biblical joy still, like what does it look like when we're in the midst of those things, when we're going through grief or sorrow?
See, this one's hard because it's hard for us to fathom the idea of being in deep sorrow and still experiencing a feeling of gladness in some way. We almost feel like they can't coexist, right? And I think the issue with it is because there's the human tendency to not rely on the joy that, again, does not come from us. It comes biblical joy, again, is not dependent upon me. It's dependent on Christ. Now that doesn't mean that when you're in deep sorrow, you're going to have a smile on your face. That's unfortunate when people think that they have to mask and all of that.
Well, cause lament is biblical.
It is biblical. But then if you also look at all the times that lamenting is done in the Bible, there's also statements of reassurance within that. So that's where biblical joy comes from. You can set in your sorrow in the sense of when those moments happen, you can be deep in your sorrow. Biblical joy, though, is that when we don't allow ourselves to just wallow in it and we still declare the reasons for praise.
Right.
Okay. So that doesn't mean that, again, we're going to, like, it's just all of a sudden our sorrow is going to be set aside. We're going to be like, yes, you know. But it goes back to the things we talked about on Sunday. It's these are the three things that do not change. The person of Christ does not change. The atonement of Christ does not change. So if you go back to David, and then the presence of Christ does not change. If you go back to David in the Psalms, there's many times where he's lamenting, right? And then that's what I love about most of his Psalms. He laments through most of it, but then at the end he has that but moment, like but then he declares the praises of God, like these are the things. So I think that's the thing is learning to be people that don't just wallow in the sorrow, but also being people to declare the praises of God. These are the, and then trusting that God's going to produce the joy in us through our declaration of these truths. Like, I'm going to focus on this also, God, and I'm going to trust that because you are the source of my joy.
Yeah.
You know, I was actually just reading, if this helps. So Spurgeon is, I love reading Charles Spurgeon and a lot of people don't know this about Spurgeon because he's known as like the Prince of Preachers and he's very famous. Spurgeon had crippling depression in his life and in his ministry. Extremely bad depression. And a lot of people don't know that because they look at what God accomplished through him. And so here's a man that dealt with horrible moments of sorrow and depression, but yet he also said things like this: "The Lord Jesus is a deep sea of joy. My soul shall dive therein." Like, so here's a guy that crippling depression and sorrow in his life, but he would also declare, like, Jesus is a deep sea of joy. I'm going to dive into that.
In a time when no one probably talked about it.
Oh, yeah, no, like, no.
Yeah.
No. There was no concept of, you know. And if you read his life, there's specific things that really did happen that caused. Like, he had some pretty significant. This wasn't just I have clinical depression, you know.
Right.
He had moments that one of them that was really interesting is, because that's sometimes where we fall into, is people say, well, you don't know what I've gone through.
Right.
And I'm not denying that, right? 100%. Nobody knows what you're walking through but you and Jesus. And that's the point. And so one example is when I was reading his life is Spurgeon, when he was young, and he was a preacher, like he was starting out as a preacher. He was large crowds in a church, and somebody came in and yelled fire. And there was the panic. Seven people died in being crushed by leaving. And he carried this, like, that started some of his, like, carrying this weight of responsibility. And so, like, he had these moments of, that's where a lot of it came from, and then other tragedies that happened in his life. And then he also ended up having extreme health issues that caused a lot of pain that would cause him not to be able to preach. And so he had specific things that were causing, but yet, again, Jesus is a deep sea of joy.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm going to dive therein. You know, and so that's how sorrow and joy can intermingle, because when we declare these truths, we're taking our sorrows to the only source yep. that can deal with it mm-hmm. versus I'm going to wallow in it mm-hmm. and I'm just going to hold it
yeah.
versus I'm going to lay it at the feet of Christ.
Yeah. Well, and I think sometimes we think that it'll just be eradicated
mm-hmm.
and sometimes maybe it is, but sometimes maybe that's something that's with you until you die.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes our expectations maybe
mm-hmm.
about
mm-hmm.
how that works. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I was also thinking about it. I wish I could tell you. I'm pretty sure is it in Lamentations where it talks about sorrow may last through the night, but joy comes in the morning. I think it's Jeremiah that says it. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking about that because I've always been foolish in this thinking of that's speaking of the actual night and day, mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm sorrowful today, but tomorrow's a brand new day and my joy is going to come. Let's just be, how many of us, when we're really dealing with sorrow, don't yeah. experience that the next yeah. day, the sorrow is still there. The yeah. next day, the sorrow is still there. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking about that actually. And I kind of was like, oh, but that's where the source of joy is that's not just talking about the potential of the next day. As a believer in Christ, I'm looking towards the dawn of eternity.
Yeah.
Like, I can be in my sorrow here, but I should have the reassurances that there's coming a dawn, a day, where all sorrow will be dealt with and taken care of. Like, there will come a day where the new day, you know. And so, as believers, that's the other thing we need to focus on, is that doesn't change my sorrow here, but I can still rejoice to know there's a day that God's going to, it's yep. going to be gone.
It makes us long for heaven.
Yes.
And I think sometimes that's some of the purpose of the things we go through. Mm-hmm. Because if life was grand all the time, I don't know why I said it that way. That was weird. If life was grand all the time, we wouldn't long for heaven.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Last question real quick. At the end of your sermon, you gave kind of some action steps for us. Two of them being pursue Jesus.
Yep.
And submit ourselves to God's pruning.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we practically do those things?
Well, we as a church constantly talk about avenues of pursuing Jesus, right? There's mm-hmm. the word, there's fellowship, there's involvement, there's serving, there's, you know, there's so many. And we chalk them up as, oh, the church is always just telling me to do these things. But those are legitimately the ways that we pursue Jesus. Mm-hmm. And we also need to do it in the context of the church, because we need other people to help us
yeah.
to pursue, but also to pursue the biblical Jesus.
Right.
So if I do it on my own, I can create the Jesus that makes sense to me.
Yeah. And you can ask the friends that are going to tell you the things mm-hmm. that you want to hear.
Exactly. You can. Yeah. So that's easy to happen. Right. Mm-hmm. But that's the beauty of also this is, you know, you're needed to be part of the church because you're going to help hold other people accountable too.
Absolutely.
Right. So just because, you know, I don't want to sit here and say, hey, there might come a Sunday I say something and somebody might come to me and be like, hey, wait a minute, I need mm-hmm. a challenge.
Yep.
How you said that or what that, you know,
yep.
Because we're all working through pursuing yes. the real Jesus.
Yep.
Okay. So that's a big one, is those avenues that are already available to us is pursuing Jesus. The pruning one is interesting because, okay, I didn't want to get into it on Sunday per se, mm-hmm. Because I was kind of hoping it'd be a little more upbeat, you know, but this is a legitimate thing, is one of the reasons many of us don't have joy is just the blatant sin that's in our lives.
Sure.
And that's mm-hmm. the pruning process. It's, well, I don't have joy. Well, how are you living against God? It's the awkwardness, right? How do you have joy in someone when, so example is when Amy and I, you think about marriage, right? Amy and I, if we're in great moods and we're getting along and I'm enjoying her presence, she's enjoying mine, we're having fun, it's great.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden something happens that puts a wedge between the relationship yeah. and you don't necessarily feel the joy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, yeah, been there, done that, bought that t-shirt.
Yeah. So that's one of the things we have to say when you think of pruning. Uh-huh. Pruning is God basically saying, listen, this is in your life and it's actually keeping you from me producing the fruit of joy in you. So you need to let me prune it mm-hmm. and get it out.
Mm, that's preaching to me today, David.
So that's a big one in being pruned, is God basically saying, this is what you're allowing to stop me being able to flow into you. And I got to get it out. Mm-hmm. Right? So some of it's actual sin. some of it also goes back to what we're talking about, you know, changing your thinking, right? Scripture talks a lot about changing your thinking, but sometimes that gets in the way, is my mindset of, so an example would be if as a Christian, I feel like, well, God only loves me if my life's blessed. If I'm living the grand life, then right. God, so God's like, I got to prune that out of you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I gotta prune you to help you understand that I love you just as much in the hard stuff. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I allow the hard stuff because I'm molding you and shaping you, and this is the mm-hmm. fire that's purifying you. So sometimes it's mindset he has to prune. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he has to prune actual physical things out of our lives, mm-hmm. like people or situations, mm-hmm. in or context of where we find ourselves. He's right. like, hey, you're in an environment that is stealing your joy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
not allowing, so I need to prune this out of your life.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, so there's many avenues of pruning mm-hmm. that God can go through. What I, you know, when we talked about Sunday, is just, are you willing to submit yourself to mm-hmm. prune me? Because you can fight against God's pruning, and God,
sure.
in His infinite grace and wisdom, will have moments where He's like, well, I ain't fighting you. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll just let you flounder there.
Yep.
And when you're submit, then we'll start back up.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say this in a way that sounds judgmental, but that's just where a lot of Christians, I think, find themselves.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Is if we're struggling with joy, we might need to ask ourselves, has God basically said, all right.
Yeah. Dummy.
I'm going to let you, I'll let you figure that out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's the submit part, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's fun.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's never pleasant. Let's just yeah. put it that way. Pruning is, I mean, think about it. You're getting stuff cut off, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. and ripped out, and mm-hmm. it's not pleasant.
How would, like, spiritual disciplines play into this?
Well, I think spiritual
discipline. Pursuing and the, maybe, and the pruning.
Well, both of them are, they're given as avenues to, you know, put
like,
yourself.
Would that be a good place? If you feel like you're kind of mm-hmm. in that floundering place, like.
Yeah.
I always feel like when I'm like not feeling as connected,
mm-hmm.
just reevaluating my disciplines and like focusing back on that kind of stuff is really helpful for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's maybe just my control issue I have, mm-hmm. but it feels like it helps. I don't know.
They should. Disciplines are, I like the way Wesley always talked about them in the sense of they're called means of grace,
mm-hmm.
meaning God has given them to us as a means for Him to pour out His grace.
Mm-hmm.
So the example would be when I choose to fast,
mm-hmm.
It's something He's given to me as a posture where I am ready to allow His grace to flow into my life. Like I'm purposely putting myself there
right.
to do that. Any of those means, worship, you know, prayer, study, solitude, mm-hmm. silence, you know, all of those things are means, and they should be regularly used in pursuing and in pruning, because mm-hmm. the two are hand in hand. You're not going to get pruned unless you're pursuing.
Right.
You know, it's somebody can't just say, Lord, prune me, and then God's like, you're not even pursuing me.
Right.
Because it's the pursuing that's actually going to be the avenue that He prunes. Mm-hmm. Right. So as I'm in the Word pursuing, He's going to speak to me on what needs to be pruned.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm fasting, He's going to speak to me and show me what needs to be pruned. Mm-hmm. So the two go hand in hand, and the disciplines are the means in which He's going to yeah. speak through those.
Yeah.
That's one of the things where I hope somebody's listening to this that maybe doesn't come to church for, you know, or hasn't for a long time, but that's one of the reasons we gather for worship.
Yeah.
It's a discipline of
yeah.
pursuing, but also being pruned.
Mm-hmm.
It's a means of grace, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, worship as a church is a means of grace.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we neglect that, we shouldn't be surprised when the flow of God's
right.
presence and Him as the vine and us as the branch gets mm-hmm. messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Where's my joy? Well, you're neglecting yeah. the means of grace I've given to you yeah. to have joy.
That's a really good example of pursuing and pruning, because it's necessary, but it is hard
mm-hmm.
because people are messy. I mean, we say that all the time, but it's true. And we're just a group of people that don't always agree and see eye to eye on everything. We all have our own preferences on how Sunday morning should be and
yep.
what we would want it to be. And like, and that can get in the way sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah. Well, and that goes back to pursuing and pruning in the,
yep.
it's not about me.
Yeah. That's perfect.
And you know.
Yeah.
I need to be pruned on that also. So
mm-hmm. we We all do. We all, absolutely all do.
Yeah.
All right. So this Sunday, what's up next? Just so, we can all brace ourselves.
So that's I knew you were going to ask me that question because I had a list and a plan, and then I'm playing with something right now with this here. But I'm about 95% sure we're going to be talking about the fact that on the narrow, like, God is the God of the impossible, mm-hmm. right? Like, and us pursuing a mindset, it kind of connects with the joy part, right? Like, mm-hmm. as joyful, we are victorious. And man, we need to live with a spirit of God can do the impossible. Mm-hmm. And these are some of the areas in our lives where we should be expecting God to do the impossible. Mm-hmm. Like, almost like a expectation mm-hmm. mindset of, so again, I'm hoping it'll be uplifting in the sense like, these are the things that God is awesome and that he's able to yeah. do. But our joy really comes, our joy should really flow from the presence of Christ, but like the victory of Jesus, right? Like, mm-hmm. and that's kind of what we're going to talk about, you know? Yeah. Cause there's a few times in the New Testament that it says, you know, Jesus says it a few times, like with man, that's impossible. God, everything's possible, mm-hmm. you know, and they're in different contexts. You have one with salvation, but he has another one with healing where, you know, like this yeah. man says, you know, if you're willing, you can heal me. And Jesus is like, willing. Like, you know, nothing's impossible with me.
The verse that's always taken out of context, the other one, the Philippians, I can do all things.
All things, it'll be mentioned probably. it'll yes. be mentioned probably. Okay. But then even in Jeremiah, I think it's Jeremiah, he makes a comment there. He says, God can do hard things. Like mm-hmm. he basically, there's nothing impossible for God. Mm-hmm. But how often do we live with this, you right. know, oh, God can't do that, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so as a caveat, one of the ones we'll probably talk about is how, you know, how many of us believe that God can truly transform us? Mm-hmm. Or do we live with the I can'ts?
Yeah.
I can't change.
Yeah.
I can't be different.
Yeah, because I'm an Enneagram this or yeah. I'm the, yeah, no. Yeah. I agree. Yep.
So that's probably mm-hmm. like I said, about 95% sure that's where we're going to be.
Okay. Yeah. I don't like this 95%.
I know. Hey, I feel like that's passing. So that's I'm comfortable.
It is passing.
I'm comfortable with it. That's an A.
But 95% to David is like 65% to Malia. So, you know, that's just how it is.
I don't know. I think you're giving 65 is a little bit more generous than.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you guys, it's just going to be a big surprise when you come on Sunday.
Could be.
There you go. Thanks for listening.